south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, last time I ended the show talking about lawyers, mentioning the fact that even though I've been down here more than 20 years, I've never heard lawyer jokes. And that says a lot about how the locals view lawyers. At least lawyers practicing off the gringo tourist trail. Which is another reason why I highly recommend you stay off that trail yourself. And note that 95% of Latin America is off the gringo tourist trail. So again, let me repeat. When you're off the gringo tourist trail, Latin lawyers are unlike first world lawyers. All because of that advantageous lag time effect that we talk about. Advantageous to us, that is. That said, lawyers here don't have that putrid reputation that politicians and lawyers up north suffer from. In fact, it was just about a year ago, I was at another one of those upscale parties, the ones I usually hate to go to, but I was dragged to this one. Yep, that'll happen sometimes. Anyway, that's where you see the usual pretentious mix of political clowns and lawyers and embassy jerks and scumbags from various embassies, US, Mexico, UK, Panama, Argentina. You know, the usual embassy, government-type human colostomy bags that never held a real job in their entire lives. And that's being kind. Anyway, occasionally, like at this very dull party, I like to test out that lawyer joke thesis of mine. I'll tell an old standby lawyer joke that I think I heard back in the sixth grade. Just to stir things up a bit and get a reaction. You know the one where you ask someone at a party, what do you call a busload of lawyers at the bottom of the ocean? The answer, of course, is a good start. And you know what? Only the first world embassy jerks chuckled at that one. And because of the audience, I told it in English and Spanish, and still, no response from the locals. They just didn't get it. Now, of course, Latin America has its share of scumbag lawyers. And the vast majority of those parasites can be found, you know where, on the gringo tourist trail. Costa Rica, Panama, Cancun, in fact, most of Mexico. And you know, I think it should be international law that 99.9% of all lawyers that go into politics, whether in the first world or third world, should eventually be shot, at least in the leg. Oh, and by the way, I love expat Eddie's idea of term limits. He said, every politician everywhere should serve two terms. 1 4-year term in office and 1 4-year term in prison. But I digress, as usual. And speaking about lawyers getting shot, I mentioned in a past show that being a lawyer is one of the most dangerous jobs in Latin America. Second only, believe it or not, to being a chicken bus driver. But as it turns out, every time you read about a lawyer being shot or killed, when you pick up the local paper or flick on the TV, and you really do see a lot of that down here. The thing is, if you read the article or the follow-up articles the next day or two, you'll see that nearly every time it was no fluke or random event. These lawyers were closely connected to politicians and or narcos. And that's why us expats, when we see news like that on TV or in the paper, we can't help but repeat the punchline to that bad joke. You know, it's a good start. So bottom line, when you see in the media that a Latin lawyer's been popped, in nearly every situation, the guy was involved in some very dirty business. In fact, as expat Eddie always says, it kind of makes you believe in a certain kind of cosmic justice. Anyway, for all you first world lawyers out there listening to me, don't send me emails defending your so-called noble profession. Because noble, it ain't. Enough said about that. Now, remember a couple of shows ago, I was talking about the Arab and the Muslim populations here in Latin America. Now, a question that always seems to come up when you're standing around with a bunch of gringos and expats is, sure, there's not a hell of a lot of Arabs and Muslims and Islamic people in Latin America, but they are down here. Every medium and large city has a small contingent. So you have to ask, how'd they get here? Because they, too, somehow had to get a visa to fly over. They didn't come in a boat. And you know, the only reason they ended up in Latin America anyway is because they couldn't get in on their first choice, which would have been the US or Canada. Most of them never even bother. They know it's futile. Why? Because first world visa requirements are just too impossible for the average Middle Eastern person to fulfill. In any event, they couldn't even get on a plane without a bona fide visa from some Latin American country they planned on visiting. In other words, somewhere along the line, they had to have made it to a Latin consulate in their country in the Middle East or North Africa or wherever to fill out the proper paperwork and forms and get that visa, which is still very difficult to do, by the way. In many cases, in fact, the rules and regs to get a visa to a Latin country are exactly the same as they are to get a visa to the U.S. And if you doubt that, just jump on the Mexican, Brazilian, Costa Rican, Chilean, or Panama consular websites and you'll see what I'm talking about. So then, if they have to jump through just as many hoops to get a visa to, let's say, Paraguay, Belize, or Bolivia, when the vast majority of Middle Easterners wouldn't even try to get a visa to the U.S. or Canada because they know it's hopeless, why would Middle Eastern people try for a third world country then, knowing third world visas are just as hard to get, ostensibly anyway? The question being then, how did they pass muster at a Latin foreign consulate in their home country? I mean, they're here, in Latin America, in small numbers, yes, but they are living here now. So then, how did they get the visas? Well, I'll give you one guess. A lot of them, and who knows what percentage, came through by simple bribery. Though no one would call it that, not in the Middle East. That would simply be called greasing the wheels. Or handing over a little gift to move to the front of the line. Same for Latin America. That's why so many long-term expats I know carry with them in a hidden pocket a $100 bill, a $50 bill, and a $20 bill. Why? To grease the wheels when necessary, of course. Like, for example, when you get pulled over by a lone cop. We talked about that before, didn't we? Every gringo and expat who's ever been down here for some time has greased the wheels himself a bit. Bribery is a way of life. Though, here in Latin America, they call it mordida. Now, I don't know what they call it in the Middle East. Maybe they don't even have a name for it. It's so common. But that's life in the Middle East. Now it's time for a little story. I have a Latin friend whose brother worked for years as an attaché to the Costa Rican consulate in Vienna, Austria. Now, this guy told me that his brother gets a housing allowance from the Costa Rica Diplomatic Corps because that's part of his pay package and benefits, and he gets a paid round-trip ticket for him and his family to come back to Costa Rica once a year, part of that benefits package, and of course a salary. However, since the cost of living in Vienna, Austria is actually more than the cost of living in a big city in the United States, a person really has to make at least 60,000 bucks a year to live a middle-class life. And that's true of Vienna and most European capitals, too. And if you're looking at London, Paris, Rome, or Madrid, the cost of living is even beyond that. Anyway, but, and this is a big but, that's no reference to any rap song, by the way, the Costa Rican government only pays this guy 24,000 bucks a year. That's for his salary, and that's at least three times as much as he'd get if he was working for the government in somewhat the same capacity in Costa Rica, believe it or not. So naturally, when he got that job some years ago, he thought it was a great deal. Triple his government salary back home and living in a beautiful first world country. And since, like his brother said, that job comes with some glamour and snob appeal, working at an embassy in Vienna, he's been on that job for years and makes do. Though he looks like he's living high off the hog with three-piece suits and everything going to work every day, he goes home at night to his wife and two kids to their little apartment, and between him and his wife's salary, she's a school teacher, they could never afford, even in the 20 years they've been together in Vienna, to even scrape up a down payment on a house or a condo. In fact, he's mentioned to his brother that there are people on the dole in Vienna that make $24,000 a year. And they get everything else paid for, like their health care and apartment, too. And that's pretty much the same story with all Latin American consulates throughout the world. Turns out even the ambassador himself, the head guy, makes only what we'd call a solid middle-class salary. Yet he's got to put on a show and appear at all these pompous political events, etc. And sure, he's supplied a car and a driver and a housing allowance, too. But let's just say the only way these guys can really live and keep up with the lifestyles of the other ambassadors from first world countries like France, Germany, the US, Japan, etc. People that he has to mingle with and have meetings with all the time. And those first world ambassadors and their attachés, etc., are making twice, sometimes three times as much as your average Latin American ambassador in their country. So how do they make it and why do they keep staying on the job? Besides the glamour and the snob appeal? Well, wouldn't you know, it's simple. They're highly susceptible to gifts, donations, favors, honorariums, and, well, bribes. And according to an inside source that I've spoken to, they say, nope, it's not obvious. Not at all. No one comes right out with the money and tries to bribe someone within the embassy. That would be stupid and beyond foolish. Instead, there are unofficial visa facilitators and lawyers that handle visas and applications and paperwork and accept honorariums, etc., who, with a wink and a nod, can promise a lot and generally deliver. Not in all cases, of course, but generally, as long as the Middle Easterner, North African, even Russian, Ukraine, or Bulgarian person, whatever, comes up with the proper honorarium and doesn't have a police record or isn't on an Interpol list, there's a good chance that a visa to a Latin country will be forthcoming. So, once again, as usual, embassy and consulate personnel are scumbags too. Surprise, surprise, huh? And the more an ambassador and his staff are underpaid in reference to the local cost of living, the easier it is, it seems, for an otherwise dodgy individual with incomplete paperwork to get a visa. How about that? Oh, and by the way, sometimes it's not about the money either. Just listen to this headline from a few years back. Under pressure from the U.S. government, the government of Guatemala suspended its Los Angeles-based consul general as authorities investigate accusations that he made a fraudulent Guatemalan passport for his lover and arranged for her to obtain a U.S. diplomatic visa under false pretenses. The article goes on to say one of the highest-ranking Guatemalan diplomats in the United States was jilted, it's alleged, by his former lover, a finalist in the Miss Guatemala beauty contest. Anyway, that happened a few years ago in the States, where it's much more difficult to get away with that kind of stuff. However, if you're in a Middle Eastern third world country, well, let's just say things are much more lax. Oh, and by the way, what happened to that guy who used to be the Los Angeles consul? Well, for all that mess, he came back to Guatemala and was awarded another high-level government job. Sound familiar? So the point is, even after 9/11, in the third world, the Middle Eastern third world, that is, dodgy paperwork can often be corrected by a stack of Benjamins. And by the way, note that in all 20 Latin American countries, if you're from the States, Canada, the EU, or any first world country, you're allowed 90 days in a Latin country as a tourist or visitor without having to ever apply for a visa. First world people get into Latin countries visa-free without having to go through any of that consulate garbage. And what a lot of people don't realize is that Israel, because of its high standard of living, is considered a first world country, and thus, anyone holding an Israeli passport can get into all Latin countries visa-free. The same as anyone from the States or Canada or the EU or Australia, etc. And for all the little Middle Eastern enclaves you see in the medium and large cities here, as for the Israelis and the Jewish people in Latin America, things are a bit different. They keep a low profile, they seem to have assimilated completely, and you almost never see them in the news. And they never seem to live in particular enclaves. Now, as for occasionally getting into the media or the press, the so-called Arabis, the name that Latins give to anyone who's a Muslim or from the Middle East or North Africa, who's not Jewish. Anyway, so-called Arabis, they do pop up in the news once in a while, and it's usually for two reasons. One, because one of them, who's a businessman, has been gunned down somewhere. Every couple of months, you see something like that in a paper. What you'll see on the news is a nice late-model SUV with about 20 bullet holes in it, usually on a business side street somewhere, and the motive nearly always revenge, money, or both. And the second reason Muslim Arab types will show up in the paper is, well, you're never going to guess this. It's because they get caught with truckloads of contraband material, or contraband stuff of some kind, or pirated stuff is found in their trucks or place of business. In other words, violating intellectual property laws or being involved in large-scale tax evasion. Now, most expats, especially long-term expats, would say three cheers for that, since governments are so damn corrupt down here, well, in fact, all over the world, that any money they get out of you through taxes or otherwise is basically unarmed robbery. But anyway, as it turns out, I happened to get some information firsthand from a customs official at the Mexican-Guatemala border, and he told me that of all the people who've been caught falsifying customs documents and tax numbers, etc., as well as bribing customs officials on both sides, which is very easy to do. I mean, again, these guys only make about $300 or $400 a month. Anyway, by far, the majority of people getting caught in big-time scams like that involving megabucks were, in his words, those damn Arabes. How do you think so much pirated and contraband stuff hits the streets in Latin America? It doesn't just dribble in, it comes in gigantic shipments. By the truckload, a regular network, an octopus that has to be fed. And again, let me remind you that every Latin person calls a person from the Middle East, no matter what country, an Arabi. Unless, again, he's Jewish. Then he's a Judeo. And here's a happy thought. Down here in Latin America, Latins have no pejorative, that is, insulting names or slang names, for Jews, Middle Eastern people, or Asian people. They're just Judeos, Arabis, or Chinos. Same thing goes for black people. No pejorative terms here either. They're just Negritos. That's it. There's no other term. Now, you might recall from a few past shows, I mentioned that the real pejorative term here in Latin America is to call someone an Indio. A very insulting term meaning that you're a low-class, undereducated, hayseed indigenous person. So, even though you'll hear that term, don't you ever use it yourself. And on that score, some Latins have asked me, confidentially, if the word gringo is an insulting term when they use it. To which I always say, depends on how you say it. Gringo, gringo, or gringo. There you have it. It can be nice, neutral, or insulting, depending on where you put the accent. But I digress again. Anyway, so I've been informed from a customs investigator himself that even though less than 0.1% of the people in Latin America are so-called Arabes, the majority of people who get caught for big-time customs fraud are people of Middle Eastern descent. And he made it very clear that these folks were Arabes, not Judeos, meaning the Arabs, not the Jews. That said, what about radical Islamic fundamentalism in regards to the local Middle Eastern population here in Latin America? Well, it turns out there's almost nothing regarding that in local Latin newspapers. Up to now, it's been a non-issue. No protests, no activists, no street marchers, and no uncovered terrorists or clandestine cells. But that could change in a hurry. We'll see. That said, everyone knows there just has to be a contingent of radicals and cells located down here somewhere. Probably in every country. Who knows? So far, they seem to be very well under the radar, but time will tell. And another question comes up then. Do Latins hang around with Middle Eastern folks? Do they show up at standard Latin events, quinceañero parties and such? Do you see them hanging with friendly groups of Latins at restaurants or in bars and discos watching the World Cup together? Well, the answer is decidedly no. Just like the average Latin person does not have any Asian friends. Even though these days there are plenty of Asians around, you see them at shopping centers and such, they are, you know, heavily investing down here. And you'd think because of their increasing numbers, you'd see them show up at mixed events like birthdays and weddings and such, even quinceañero parties. But you don't. The fact is, when you see Asian people, they're always with other Asian people. And when you see Middle Eastern people, they stick with their own kind too. And again, I'm talking about off the gringo tourist trail. And here's a biggie that no one likes to talk about, except behind closed doors and in whispers too, because it's so un-PC. Now, you see, in regards to Latin American women, when you put the question to them what their opinion is of Middle Eastern and even Asian people, they're considered way, way down on the list as far as eligible mates. Unfortunately, according to the women down here, Middle Easterners and Asian guys haven't got a chance in hell. Unless they've got real money, which always tends to break through the class and race barriers, don't you know? And as nasty as this might sound, and I've heard this from so many women that I just have to bring it up, the average Latin woman avoids these guys like the plague as far as romantic attachments. Now, in speaking of Middle Eastern people again, we have to talk about the Jews, who, by the way, are down here in Latin America in every middle and large city too, and are basically quite successful in business. And over the years, I've met a lot of Jewish Latin Americans. And believe me, there are such folks. People whose parents came from Israel or the States many generations ago, so their kids are born down here and have Latin customs. And I've met quite a few Jews who've been transplanted down to Latin America in the last 10 or 20 years from the States due to business. Many, many of them down here because of the garment trade. In fact, in some Latin American countries like Honduras, Belize, Guatemala, Nicaragua, etc., clothing factories employ hundreds of thousands of locals. And strangely enough, the people in charge of most of these factories are usually transplanted New York Jews from the garment district, and for some reason, South Koreans. Go figure. Now, as far as the local Jewish people and their social status, funny enough, I've never met one who's been less than upper middle class, which more or less translates to solid middle class New York or Cleveland style. In other words, you know, two cars in the driveway and all that. Meaning you don't see poor or even middle class Jews down here in Latin America. At least, I never have. Seems like they're all doing pretty well. And if you come down here, you'll notice that they've made a point of blending in so well that there really is no telling them apart from any other upper middle class segment of Latin society, except for the fact that physically they're much less Latino looking, that is, short and brown, and look much more like they come from Middle European stock. Which is logical because they tend to marry within their own group too, even though they mix quite well with other segments of Latin society. Still, you don't find too many Jewish people who aren't married to another Jewish person, though there are exceptions that I'll mention in a second. So, down here, like up in the States, I guess, there still is a stigma within their community about marrying outside the culture. So, like I said, they blend in completely except for that odd Hasidic segment with the funny hats and the curly Q hair and the beards and the baggy black suits. They're down here too, but in very, very small numbers. So, anyway, if you're at a party, especially an upper middle class or upscale party, there certainly could be a few Jewish guys or gals there, but you wouldn't know it unless they told you. And by the way, over the years I've had three Latin friends who were half Jewish, mother or father being Jewish, whatever. And all three of them told me it was kind of tough growing up that way, and that there's still a lot of pressure within their culture to marry within the religion. That said, just know that the Jewish and Muslim combined population down here is still well under 1%. Now, like I mentioned before, occasionally in the bigger cities you'll catch a glimpse of a Hasidic Jew. And that's a group that really keeps to themselves. In fact, there's zero chance of running into one of those guys at a quinceañeros party. And so do the large contingent of Mormons. Keep to themselves, that is. Except, of course, when they're out saving souls for Jesus and Joseph. Joseph Smith, that is. Remember him? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not picking on Mormons particularly here, but it's just so odd to see in a big congested city or way out in the boonies, and suddenly you see a big blonde head or two bobbing in the distance about a foot taller than everyone else. Well, you gotta know, they're either clueless Scandinavian backpackers looking for a $5 a night flea bag hotel, or Mormons. Oh, and by the way, I'm invited to a Halloween party already. Down here, Halloween's become a big thing. But just in the last 5 years or so. Before that, it was only a big thing in the gringo tourist areas, but now it's gotten some traction pretty much everywhere. So for Halloween night, what should I go as? Think I'll bleach my hair blonde, starch up my white shirt, get some suspenders, and go as a Mormon. Or Hasidic Jew, maybe. Nah, Mormon's better. Think I'll fool anybody? Well, I do have two things going for me. I got the height, and I can't dance. And it's not that I can't dance because, like the Mormons, I was told I can't dance. It's that I can't dance. Oh, and get this. I like to talk to Mormons down here. Or as expat Eddie says, I like to hassle them a bit. Put them through their paces. In a nice way, of course. I guess I do hassle them a bit because I like to ask them things like, how come they never seem to get mugged? No matter how bad a neighborhood they're in. They say it's divine protection. I say it's a combination of awe, the gringo advantage, and dumb luck. Of course, there's the fact that me and every other long-term expat were always surprised by how their churches just happen to be the nicest, most expensive, most well-built buildings in the neighborhood that they're set up in. While most of the people they're trying to convert live in tin shacks with dirt floors, no glass in the windows, no sewage systems, and they cook with firewood. And you know, these Mormon guys, they never seem to have an adequate answer for that. And speaking of Mormon guys, how come they're all guys? I never see Mormon girls traveling in pairs and wearing the uniform. I guess I don't know much about that. I'll have to check it out. That said, I do like to put them on the spot a bit and throw a few questions at them. They're always friendly enough and glad to try to convert me. And you know, just the other day I was at a sidewalk cafe and there was a Mormon standing around talking to his friend and I asked him, "When you guys go through airports with those standard backpacks, does the TSA or any of the airport guys make you take off your shoes and search you and stuff? Do you get the touchy-feely exploration part some of the time?" And the darker, shorter Latin Mormon, he said, "Why, yes, you know, that's standard procedure, right?" And the tall, blonde, very white-skinned Mormon with him, he said in foreign airports almost never, but in the States almost always. And he also said in Latin airports he's almost never frisked. No one ever touches him. Just a little piece of information for you guys and gals out there. I'd have to say the suspenders and the white short-sleeved shirts looking better all the time, huh? Just brainstorming here, you know? Now, you know, I'm getting towards the end of the show here now, and I've only got about 45 seconds left. So in that time, I'd like to once again mention my Latin American seminar coming up in the first part of the month of January 2015. This time again, it'll be in and around Guatemala with a very large boots-on-the-ground portion. That means classes in the morning till noon, boots on the ground in the afternoon and evening, for 6 days and nights. So do go to www.expatwisdom.com, then click on the Latin seminar link at the left top of the page for full details. And you'll notice when you get on that site that if you're coming as a couple or two people sharing double occupancy, you'll save, get this, $1,000. So do check it out and try to get someone to come along with you. That way you'll get that huge discount. Once again, go to www.expatwisdom.com and click on the Latin seminar link. So if you want to get on the guaranteed fast track to becoming a Latin American expat, you won't want to miss this.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.